From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, September 5th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Dempsey Challenge. Run, walk, or bike this September to help the Dempsey Center support those impacted by cancer. DempseyChallenge.org. And Douglas Ridge, a Unity Technologies eco-conservation subdivision in Brunswick, committed to net zero home design. More at douglasridge.com.
The Portland City Council has officially accepted and will allocate more than $900,000 in private donations to the more than 400 asylum seekers who arrived this summer. The council voted unanimously yesterday to accept the donations and to put the money into the city's Health and Human Services budget to use for sheltering and basic needs for migrant families. Democratic 2nd District Congressman Jared Golden says he is not going to take a side in the 2020 Senate race. The Sun Journal reports Golden says he respects both incumbent Republican Susan Collins and the top Democratic challenger, Maine House Speaker Sarah Gideon. Meanwhile, Golden will hold a field hearing in Machias tomorrow afternoon on helping rural communities get access to broadband service. Mal Leary has details.
Golden, who chairs the Contracting and Infrastructure Subcommittee of the House Committee on Small Business, says access to broadband has become a necessity for a growing number of businesses. But he says there are many parts of rural America where it's either not available or too expensive.
In states like Maine, it's always going to be, at the end of the day, a discussion about how do we pay for the infrastructure that would support broadband service in rural communities.
He says the panel held a similar hearing this spring in Minnesota. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The hearing runs tomorrow from 3:30 to 5:30 at the University of Maine at Machias. And Maine's deer hunters will learn this week if they have been selected for a permit that allows them to hunt a wider variety of deer. Maine manages its large deer population with any deer permits, which allow hunters to hunt antlerless deer and bucks that have antlers less than 3 inches in length. Hunters without such a permit can only hunt longer antlered bucks. The Any Deer Permit Lottery is scheduled for tomorrow. The results will be posted online at noon. The state intends to issue a little bit more than 68,000 Any Deer permits this year. That represents a reduction of about 20% from the previous deer season. Hunters killed more deer than the state's objective last year. The firearm season for deer is in November. In weather tonight, mostly clear skies with some valley fog, partly cloudy in the north with lows in the high 30s to the low 50s. Tomorrow, partly sunny with highs in the low 60s to low 70s, and on Saturday, showers ending in most of the state by the afternoon, continuing through the evening down east. A federal immigration judge has ruled that a 46-year-old Portland man won't be deported to Somalia, at least for now, under the United Nations Convention on Torture because of issues related to the political situation there. Abdighani Hussein first came to the U.S. as a refugee and is now a permanent U.S. resident who lives in Portland with his wife and three children. In 2002, he was arrested and sentenced to probation for possessing cat, a mild stimulant grown in East Africa that's illegal in the U.S. His felony record placed him under threat of deportation under the Trump administration's crackdown on immigrants convicted of crimes. Hussein says when he showed up for his regular check-in with ICE as part of the agreement that allowed him to stay in the country, he was arrested, detained for months without a hearing, and almost deported.
They arrest me in a South Portland office in immigration, and they took me to the Cumberland County Jail. And I believe I spent 3 days, and then they transferred for me in a detention center in New Hampshire, start processing me to a deportation.
And you were almost deported?
Almost. They transferred me to New Hampshire to the New Orleans. That's the headquarters of a deportation center. The jail has a couple runway landing and take off night and day. They taking people away. I was in one of the flight. When I was getting to the airplane and the guy came and he called my name and another person, his name, and he said, these two people, they're not going. and send him back to the cells.
Abdi, what did the detention and then almost being deported, what did this do to your life and your family?
My children, they couldn't focus to school and because they missed me. And I almost give up to the life because this is the place I built my beautiful life I have. And I didn't know what to do when I was in detention. And my whole family, they was, you know, upset. And they was having a pain. And my children, they didn't understand why I'm in jail. They keep asking me what he did, that. And they don't understand the immigration process. And, you know, I couldn't explain. I have a one-year probation in 2002. That's why I'm in jail.
Now, a federal immigration judge has ruled that you should not be deported to Somalia at this moment for human rights reasons, although the government can still appeal this and you could be deported later. This decision was made on the basis that Somalia would not be a safe place for you right now. What would happen if you were to return?
If I return, I believe that's like my death penalty. And my life is in danger. If I go back, that's what I believe.
So even given this, that this is a temporary relief rather than a permanent change, how do you feel right now?
I feel so lucky. And I don't know how many days left in my life, but I'm still, you know, and hanging on. And I'm happy for this decision from the court.
And how does your family feel?
Oh, my God. You cannot imagine how they feel. They feel like, you know, I reborn again. Yeah.
What happens now?
Right now, my life, regular routine. I go back to my work and play my kids and, you know, take him to the school and bring him back. And I go back to my routine life. But I don't know how long it's going to be this way.
Abdi Ghani Hussein, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hussein could still be deported if the situation changes in Somalia or if the federal government appeals by the deadline of September 9th. And one person's trash, it's been said, is another person's treasure, except when it comes to recycling. A crash in the global recycling market last year is forcing municipalities in Maine to prevent household trash from contaminating their recycling streams or pay hefty fees. The new added cost has led some Maine towns to drop recycling altogether, but a handful of towns in southern Maine tried a different tactic this summer, hiring interns to walk through neighborhoods, peek into curbside recycling bins, and leave behind direct feedback on the do's and don'ts of recycling. Patty White has more.
On this sunny August morning, two 20-something recycling interns are making their way through a residential neighborhood in Scarborough, where waist-high recycling bins are parked at the end of each driveway.
This is one of our first bin here.
Torvald Arnell lifts up the lid so he and fellow intern Julie Gourlay can peer inside.
We'll usually give a quick little peek. I see some cardboard containers, a milk jug.
Arnell and Gourlay have been trained to look, but not touch, for reasons of personal safety as well as the residents' privacy. They assess how many items in the bin are truly recyclable, then stick on one of three tags. If they spot one of those bubble mailers in the bin, not recyclable. That would earn a yellow oops tag. A bag of yard waste? That's more egregious and earns a red oops tag. But this particular bin contains all recyclables. That's a green tag.
It's pretty cute. It says that you're a recycling superstar.
While their internship is now over, Arnell and Gourlay say their job this past summer was to try to gently train as many recycling superstars as possible. They're among 10 interns who were hired by four communities, Scarborough, South Portland, Falmouth, and Windham, to tag bins in certain neighborhoods each week. It was a pilot project in partnership with the waste management company EcoMaine, where Katrina Boussier-Van Huysen is a senior environmental educator.
The goal was to reach more folks than just, say, a brochure in the mail would, because people can either choose to read that or not, but they're going to see a sticker on their bin. They're going to see people walking down the street.
The new sense of urgency was prompted by China's decision last year to close its doors to most of the world's recycling because of too much trash in the mix. Before that market collapse, EcoMaine was able to sell its recycling, but now it has to pay recyclers to take it, with the added cost of removing contaminants from the stream, even large and easy-to-spot items, says Van Huysen.
When one person says, oh, I'm sure this basketball is fine, that's, you know, it's not great, but it's not detrimental to the system. When 200,000 people do it, and they do it with regularity, then that's a problem.
The interns got to see firsthand the problem of what's been dubbed wish cycling during their training. They spent time in EcoMaine's sorting room, where Van Huysen says they picked about 200 gallons of trash from the passing conveyor belt in just 10 minutes. Everything from dirty diapers to dirty syringes. Julie Gourlay says trying to keep up with the conveyor was overwhelming.
And just seeing all the things that people are putting into their bins, whether they know it should be there or not. I think I pulled out like a 20-pound dumbbell.
Back on her neighborhood route in Scarborough, she and Arnell encounter more common problems as they check through the curbside containers.
Another bin here. Oh, we got some goodies in here. And when I say goodies, I mean not goodies. There's some plastic bags. There's some wraps.
Plastic bags, Arnell says, are among the most common recycling mistake they confront. And they do cause problems by getting tangled in EcoMaine sorting machines. This bin would get a yellow oops tag. The interns say most residents seemed receptive to their recycling feedback, usually communicated through the colored tags, but occasionally face-to-face.
You get an early start. Wow.
Morning.
How you doing today?
Neighborhood resident Lisa Norton slows her car as she drives by. She says the tags on her recycling bin were like badges of honor, at least when they were green.
I want to say at least four green ones. I got a yellow one because we had a paper towel in there. Shame! And I was putting them up in the garage like they were awards. So when I came home, my husband had them up there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. But it's been very informational.
In all four participating communities, contamination in the specific neighborhoods targeted did go down. In Scarborough, for example, 52% of the households in the pilot project were green the first week. By the last week, that number jumped to more than 80%. Townwide, the drop in contamination wasn't as dramatic, but Scarborough did see the largest decrease of all the communities at 7%.
Looks pretty solid.
Looks like a green.
The recycling interns have done their work for the summer, and now Julie Gourlay and Torvald Arnell say it's up to local residents to remain vigilant.
Now that we're done tagging, the question is, are they going to keep it up?
Recycling is as complicated as you want it to be. If you don't want to learn anything about recycling, then it's difficult for you. And you're going to be bringing your town's contamination rates up, and you're going to wind up paying more.
EcoMaine says it hopes to expand the recycling feedback program to even more communities next summer. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock, where the guest will be Senator Susan Collins. I'm Nora Flaherty.